I grew the business with my wife. We're literally out of a garage. I was still working at the time. So this was a side hustle that was started. And we had two kids at the time. And she would be like answering calls during the day and packing stuff up. And I would come home at night. And then I would build out the website until 11 or 12, go to sleep, go back to work, and then repeat.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast, where I show you that you don't have to be a natural born entrepreneur to build a business that gives you time freedom, location freedom, and financial freedom. My name is Ryan Helms, and in just 27 months, I paid off over $209,000 in debt, quit my 9-to-5 job, and started building my dream business that scaled to six figures of income in less than 6 months. And on this podcast, I'll be sharing exactly how I did it and bring on some awesome guests that are either doing it or have already done the same thing. So if you're a freedom chaser and you want to fast track that process, this is the podcast for you. And also, be sure to head over to gritandhustle.co to grab your free copy of the Side Hustle Journal. But for now, let's hop in to today's episode. Luke, thank you so much for sitting down with myself and Hustle for Freedom audience. It means a ton that you'll carve a little bit of time out of your busy day, and we'll hear a little bit more about why it's so busy in a bit. But to start this thing off, why don't you introduce yourself by name and tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, thanks for having me here, Ryan. I'm looking forward to it. Sure. So my name is Luke Peters, and I have a couple businesses, actually. I have main businesses, New Air, and it's an appliance business. We sell compact portable appliances. Been doing that for 17 years. Started that online, and now we sell mostly to retailers. I'm also married, have six kids, live here in Southern California, and coach in sports. So have a very busy life and have a lot of fun doing it. And then in addition to that, just this year, started up a new company called Retail Band. And in that company, what we do is we help other companies sell into stores like Home Depot, Lowe's, Wayfair, or even Amazon. And then we also do influencer marketing for companies. So like an ideal company would be a brand. Maybe they're in store and they're really strong in store, but they don't really know how to crack the online code for their products. And they might need help with influencer marketing. And having a lot of fun starting this off. And then in addition to that, I'm doing a podcast called the Page One with just the number one Page One podcast. Just launched it.
Nice, so, nice. So what's the subject matter of your podcast?
So the subject matter is really just like your focus and your niche. I'm doing the same thing. So it's focused on consumer brands, leaders of those consumer brands selling into these online categories. Because remember, most of the sales are still in store. So I'm focused on how people are succeeding online. What are their strategies, tactics, how they're dealing with the tariff. And there'll be some folks that maybe are not, like, for example, I'm having, one of the largest, a guy from one of the largest M&A companies is going to be on, but that'll be interesting because then the brands are going to understand, hey, how do valuations work? What should they be focused on? And those types of questions will come about. So basically everything focused around consumer products and selling online.
Cool, man. So let's back up there a little bit. You first started out in this appliance business. That's not something that seems like somebody just kind of stumbles into. So how'd you get your start there? And then also, how did you get in briefly with some of these really big companies? Because I imagine both of those are hard. Starting a company that's based off a hard good that is huge, I guess most appliances are huge, and then also getting into some large retailers.
Okay, sure. So to start off with the appliance company, so I got out of, so my whole life, you know, come from an entrepreneurial family. So I'm 10 years old, making donuts in the middle of the night at my parents' donut store, delivering newspapers. So I'm doing all of that. Go to school. I paid for school with a swimming pool route. So I had a service business, had about 100 clients. And that was a great job, by the way. It's a lot of fun doing that job. And then finished school, sold that route to a friend of mine, and went to work as a hazardous waste scientist. Did that for a couple of years. It was a great cause, but it was honestly pretty boring work. And my little brother was selling stuff online. And I'm commuting like an hour and a half past LA in this beat up truck and working long hours. And he's like driving a nice sports car. I'm like, what the heck? You know, he didn't even go to school. And so I start kind of burning the midnight oil, understanding what he's doing. I learned SEO basically. And then I started this business online. And the way I started it was I had no idea what I was going to do. I don't know anything about appliances. But what happened is I looked at the bottom of, back in the day, in the bottom of Yahoo's search, it would show like the 100 most common searches, I think. Okay, this is like 2002, 2001. And portable air conditioner was the third search. This is during the summer. So I said, wow, that must be a good category to get into. So literally, that's how I started the business. And I just started calling on big companies like Grainger. And they kind of were, you know, like, who are you? And I'm like, well, I just, you know, want to submit a PO. What kind of discount can I get? And they're like, well, I didn't even have an account with them. just like you teach people, I just hustled, you know, just grinded. And then you just kind of figure it out little by little. So that's how I started that. So for the first 10 years, it was, and then what you do is you grow the business, you start getting sales. And when you do that, you become important to these other companies that you're buying the product. So at this time, I'm buying their products and reselling them online.
So this was like a drop shipping type model in the term that we would hear today?
Exactly. Drop ship model. Let's call that 2002 to 2012. Well, we started getting a warehouse. So drop ship model for the first year, then we got a warehouse and it was kind of a mix. And then we moved like six times. So we just keep moving bigger warehouses. And because what happens is you can get better margins if you're bringing product in. Plus you can work with people who they don't want to drop ship for you if you're not big enough. So there's and right now it's a tougher model to run by. But anyways, did that for about 10 years. And then around 2012, all the big box retailers started waking up. It wasn't just Amazon, it was everybody else. They started getting big marketing departments and learned SEO, and they start showing up in the rankings. So then at that time, I kind of thought I had to look out in the future and just say, hey, we better change up this model because otherwise we're going to be in big trouble. But we already had our brand. Knew our brand had already been, we just were selling direct to consumer. And so all we did was we focused on building partnerships with these guys and selling the product through their websites instead of only through ours. So that was and it was a good time to do it because they were hungry for new brands and we already had an established brand online. It wasn't a new brand. They saw it all over the place. And so it was very easy. They just kind of rolled out the red carpet and we were able to get our brand online into their stores. Now for retail ban, that's exactly what we're doing for other companies. But at the time we just had to figure it out. You have to go sign contracts and know who to talk to. And it's kind of a slow process and there's a lot of mistakes, you know, that you can make along the way.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, with that whole evolution, growing that company, expanding, switching the business model, somewhere along the path, you found time to have six kids and, you know, spend time with the kids, get them, sounds like they're playing sports and all that kind of stuff. I want to spend a few minutes just talking about how have you managed that? How have you managed growing this business from scratch? I mean, it sounds like you were literally teaching yourself the foundations, right? You said you had to teach yourself SEO so that you could figure out how to start showing up to these people and literally built it from the ground up, which I know takes a lot of burning the midnight oil to make happen. So what have you learned along the way about like prioritizing your time between the business and your home life?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of lessons. I don't have it all figured out, let's put it that way, because I love to work, but I love to always do something. So I guess what I do is I don't really watch any TV, very little, maybe some football, some sports. I kind of cut out the TV and I make sure I'm coaching their teams. But you know, that's only through a certain segment of their life when you can coach. Because when they're older, they don't want you to coach, right? And so you just take advantage of that. And I definitely work a lot. So that's the problem. But I think as an entrepreneur, you have to. There often isn't a choice as you're growing a building, a business. But at the same time, you know, a lot of lawyers work a lot and a lot of other folks work a lot and they're not building equity, you know, and there's no end for them. It's kind of actually kind of goes back to the reason for your podcast, right? So with the business, at least you're building this equity and then you can say, okay, in the future, you know, there's going to be some sort of event where things will go back to normal. And right now, going through the beginning days, what would happen is I grew the business with my wife. So we were literally out of a garage and I was still working at the time. Okay. So this was a side hustle that was started and then she wasn't, and we had two kids at the time and she would be like answering calls during the day and packing stuff up. And I would come home at night and then I would build out the website until 11 or 12, go to sleep, go back to work and then repeat. So the first couple of years, it was crazy. And then now what happens is as you build a company and you add really good people to the team, you kind of get your life back. So that's the main thing is building a good team around you. I can't emphasize that enough, but it's tough because, you know, you got to have some revenue to be able to pay really good people. And then there's different levels you go through. You go through like at the beginning when you can pay a certain amount. And then as the company grows, you can bring on even higher, more talented people. And then you get a new level of freedom from that. So, you know, I can definitely, you know, take vacations and do all those things. It's not, you know, like I'm not able to leave. So we're kind of past that phase. And then I would say the other thing is as much as you can bring the kids with you, you know, so my daughter's worked a summer, my son, when we travel occasionally, I can bring the kids. So there's certain things where you can try to build it into the lifestyle. I think that's how people should think about it.
That's interesting. Yeah. Building it in, trying to incorporate the family into the activity. So it sounded like your wife being involved kind of from the beginning, you didn't have to, there wasn't much convincing on why you were working so many hours or explaining yourself. She had firsthand experience on what it was taking to build that company.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, we've moved so many times along the way. So I can remember one time when, you know, we were working out of the garage. And, you know, we had a dog, maybe we had four kids at that point. It's like all of this blurs together, but we were working literally from 7 a.m. till 11 at night, like nonstop, you know, so you do give up quite a bit at that time, but you know, she was there doing it at the same and, you know, you just find a way to get it done. But how I always look at it is you're building something, you know, you're not putting your time in and then starting from scratch the next day. Whatever you did that day, you created something. You own that, and you're going to have your good days and your bad days. But, you know, then later on, now you've kind of built that foundation, and that's kind of where we are now.
Yep. So it sounds like based on the new company that you guys are spinning up now, it has a strong correlation to the past experiences that you've accumulated over the years. Did you have to bring on a team to kind of start this company from the ground up, or was it just you kind of testing out this idea and seeing if it was going to work or not?
Yeah, good question. So I'm fortunate. Luckily we have 50 people, 50 great employees here at New Air. And so to begin with, I can test a lot of stuff kind of with our current team. They probably don't love it, but it's always because it's a new challenge and new pitches. But what it does is it creates a great opportunity for them. Right, because a lot of it is marketing department focused, because that's a lot of we're essentially an extension of another company's sales and marketing team. So we're using our kind of internal team because it's so good anyways, and then we're learning whatever we can outsource as far as, you know, research or whatever, you know, web creation, any of the stuff that it's not our core competency, we'll just kind of outsource, and then those items that we're really strong on are what we're going to do in house. So still
how did you validate that this was like a viable business opportunity? I'm sure a lot of it is just firsthand knowledge, but one of the things that a lot of people come on the podcast and they talk about is like how they proved out their model, you know, before they went out and like quit their job or dumped $20,000 into this business idea. How did you make sure it was a viable business opportunity before you kind of started pulling all these resources from, which I imagine were already very important roles in like New Air and things like that?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So just kind of my nature is I wrote up a quick little business plan and circulated that with friends and advisors. And these were successful business friends. They all loved the idea. And I knew they would tell me if they didn't, at least they wouldn't tell me they loved it, let's put it that way. But I got some really good feedback from them. And then when even some of my friends said they were interested in it, then I knew that the idea had some legs. But still, I know it's going to change. What we're doing now, I know will be different in a year. Just because as you get more customers and we figure out, hey, which direction should we be going? And we find out what the needs are of the customer, things are going to change. So I guess to answer your question is, you never know 100% with any business, you really never know. But at that time, I was the one doing most of the calls. So I'm doing all the business development and all the outreach and getting on the phone with people and kind of understanding, is it something that they're interested in? And even though I had a very good feeling just because we're in this business, I think a big thing for me was nobody is really offering what we're offering. So if we were doing like an advertising agency, a lot of companies are doing that. So you already know that model's proven. And so there's a lot of models that are already proven, and ours is a little different because it's no one is doing exactly what we're doing. But at the same time, once I put out, you know, talk to potential clients, send out some cold emails, really, literally just sending out cold emails to people is how I did it personally. So I would just, we created a prospect list. The prospect list was comprised of executives from the consumer products businesses that we feel are our target. So we had a couple of ways on how we would kind of create that target list. And it's not a huge list. It's, you know, we're at about 2,000 right now, which sounds like a lot, but I mean, that's still a very laser focused list for the services we're trying to provide. And then initially I literally just cold emailed about 60 of them. And that's kind of the initial segment that I'm working this response off of to get the business started.
How did you figure out your pricing model?
Yeah, good question. So the pricing model, so there's two parts to it. You want to make sure that, like in the old days, you could look at an agency and you could just say, okay, we're going to triple, we're going to count hours and triple the cost of those hours. And then that's what we're going to need to charge in order to be profitable. The thing is, the services we're offering are, there's different types of services. Some of them are going to be hours-based. Some of them are going to be results-based. So it's kind of a bit of a combination, actually. So there might, depending on the services that are going to be required, there'll be like a retainer, and then there will be kind of a results portion to it. And that all goes into the difficulty of doing the work. So one of the negatives is it's all of the work is, it's pretty specialized. So every company is going to be a little bit different on their needs. And that can be a challenge. Like some people might look at that and say, man, it seems like a lot of work. You're going to have to quote each one uniquely. It's not like, I'm just going to go back to the advertising agency because there's a ton of them. And they usually charge about 8 or 10% of your ad spend is kind of what their model is. So it's like a common, everybody knows kind of what they're going to pay, and you go with what agency you think is the best agency. Whereas in this model, I could take on a company that needs way more work on their products. Well, it's going to be more work for me, but hopefully I wouldn't take it on if I can't provide the upside for them. So gotcha. Meaning the good thing, you know, so it's a big value add is what I'm saying. So, which is good for retail band because, you know, it'll create hopefully a strong consultancy / agency for us because we're able to add that much value. And so we can charge appropriately.
Did you feel like since your offering is a little bit different when you started reaching out to these people, cold emailing them, things like that, did you have to spend a lot of time explaining your offering or why it's different? I could imagine they might quickly misinterpret what you're offering as the same cookie cutter as X, Y, and Z. Did you run across a lot of that, or are you running across a lot of that?
Yeah, that's you're right. There's a little bit of that. But what I did is, and we're still learning the right pitch, but what I did is I looked at all the things we offer, which is quite a few things, and I'm only talking in the pitch about influencer marketing to start. Because I think it's the easiest one that somebody can hold on to. I can say, you have a product, I can put it in front of tons of influencers, and then they still may not care. They're like, well, I don't want it. I don't need to be with the Kardashians. But how I frame it is, it's not about that. I can get you reviews. I can get you awesome SEO. It's focused on YouTube, by the way, not on Instagram. So it's evergreen content. And then, by the way, you know, when you sell on Home Depot and Lowe's and Walmart, I'll get your reviews all syndicated out. I'll teach you how to do it. And then I can help you sell on those. So I focus kind of on those two things. And because there's a lot of stuff we can do, we can work with their content, their photos, their creatives. There's all this stuff. But you're hitting the nail on the head. If I get into all that, people are going to get confused.
Yeah, for sure. How are you, or I don't completely understand your influencer marketing piece of it. So I guess my first question is, are you having to develop relationships with some of said influencers, or how would your model look like there?
Yeah, exactly. So we have a platform where we have literally, not infinite, but you know, tens of thousands or more, hundreds of thousands of influencers in this platform that we can match up to do the work. And then we created a process, just like somebody might create a email drip campaign, okay, right? They go think through the what the different emails are depending on the actions of the person receiving it. We have the same thing set up for influencers so that we can push them through the process and they're happy because in this case, they might get a product they want plus a payment to do a nice video, whatever the case is, maybe it's just a product. And they'll do an honest video, by the way, like because they have to respond to their core audience, right? They have to be authentic. But our advantage is that we have all of these processes put in place and we have all of these connections within the industry so that we're very efficient at it. If somebody had to do it themselves, it would be very steep learning curve. Or if they went through an agency, they'll pay a lot of money because usually the agencies are working with higher level influencers that charge a lot of money. We're working with like the micro influencers or the medium sized. I mean, they still will have, you know, you can still get over, you know, 10,000, 100,000 views on your YouTube video. You still can get good numbers, but they're not charging you crazy fees. So let's say somebody's got 20 sample products to send out. We can go get all of this content, maybe Instagram post, some cool lifestyle photos, a YouTube video, which is tailored to that SKU, meaning we'll track all of the SEO on it, meaning we're going to make sure that the title is mentioning the product and brand so that it can be found. If maybe people are saying, like if there's a widget, maybe they're saying they're selling a chair, and we know that review is a key word that customers are saying they want review. They want to review the chair, or best is a good word. So we'll make sure that those words usually are inside the subject line as much as we can, because the influencers are, you know, they're creative people as well. So those are the types of things that we figured out. Whereas if someone just calls up an influencer, you know, they're probably not going to mention your product name and company. You probably aren't going to be in the title. Your product will be 5 minutes into the video and no one will ever see it.
The influencer marketing stuff sounds super interesting, but it sounds pretty different than what you were doing in, and maybe I'm wrong, but what you were doing with New Air and things like that. So how did you guys develop that skill set to offer this as a solution to the market?
Okay, yeah, another good question. Actually, so it fits right in, believe it or not. So what happens is, because we're selling awesome appliances, we're selling cool stuff like beer coolers, wine coolers, beverage refrigerators, ice makers, portable air conditioners. So what happens is when that product launches, we bring a new product in, we have to create some buzz. So people can create buzz by writing blogs or, you know, just trying to get sales or trying to get sales to then get reviews. So what we want to do is we want to front end that product, just like a PR, like if you hire a PR firm, they're going to go get PR for you. That's kind of how I'd look at the influencers. So we get the product in, we already have it all set up to work out with, to send out to the influencers. We send it out to them. They do their cool videos and their reviews of the product. So boom, within 2 months, now you've got all of this collateral, all of these creatives that are made online. When you think about it, it's actually very similar to how things were done 5 years ago. It's just back then it was, let's go get 3 bloggers to talk about my product, or let's go write 5 how-to articles. You know what I mean? So we are doing the same types of things, but this is better because it's third party. It's somebody else talking about your product, which is way better than you talking about it.
Yep. Yeah. And they have another great thing, especially about, you know, YouTube and platforms like that, is the influencer. I mean, you know exactly how big their audience is. You know exactly what you're getting. So I imagine it makes the negotiating a bit more easy, because there's not any, like, maybe there is, there's not a lot of hidden variables to play there. You're like, okay, your audience is this big. This is how much we normally pay for these types of shout outs or videos or whatever. Am I accurate or am I off base?
100%. Exactly. So we have a scoring system. And that's how you can understand who do we want to work with and who do we not want to work with. And the thing is, nowadays, influencers, they kind of have ways to buy their audiences. So then there's other things. Then it's like they've got a bought audience, but then you have to have different factors that can understand, okay, how active is their audience? And that's a good telltale sign of how legitimate
like comments and likes and things like that.
Totally. Exactly. Yep. So we have all of the, we do that. And then on the output, we have a scorecard too. So the video's done. Now you have all these attributes and we give each one points. So the team understands what's important. You know, is the title correct? Is the product within the first minute of the video? Is it a actual video or is it like a vlog, which is when someone just like videos their day and then they insert your product in there? So we don't want those. And a client wouldn't want that either. So they happen sometimes, but you can't control everything. But those are the things that we're looking at to create a good video.
That's awesome. And how big of a team do you have right now supporting this new venture?
So like I said, there's 50 at the company and then we're pulling from different areas. So we got a couple of like, you know, my key people in marketing are definitely helping here. And then I did pull one person to help me like 100%, just pulled him out of, he was in one of our, in our sales department actually, and just pulled him out because he's really good with numbers and helped set up the podcast and all of these other things. So right now it's still a small team. I mean, there's probably, you know, people who are actually touching it at this one moment, probably like four people.
Cool. Yeah. Yep. Nice. So you're trying to get into big companies. So what's like an ideal company for you guys to work with?
Yeah. And we're already starting out with a couple. So that team will grow quick, but ideal company would be a company that's probably like 10 to 200 million, consumer product company, privately owned, because again, I gotta, it's great if I can have that one-on-one conversation with the CEO on this. And, yeah, that's pretty much the ideal company right there.
That is offline currently, or is that just doing online and offline?
You know, they can be both. The thing is, a lot of companies, see, some companies are, so here's a different variance that you'll have. So you'll have Amazon's easiest company to sell into, okay? And there's already agencies that help companies in Amazon. So we're not really going after that market just because I really wanted, one thing I would say if people are thinking about whenever they're going to start is to just niche down super tight. And that's kind of what we did here. So even though we sell on Amazon, we're very good there with New Air, I could run the other people's Amazon business, no problem. And we will. It's just, that's not how I'm advertising this because they can go to somebody else for that. What I did is I wanted to create an offering that nobody's even offering. And so anyways, to your question, it would be here. So we can help somebody launch a product. Now they can launch it and sell it on their website, on Amazon or Home Depot, Lowe's, but we're focused on like the Home Depot, Lowe's, Wayfair, Walmart. We're focused on that. Basically all the big box companies that you can think about that are selling online instead of, you know, in competing with Amazon essentially. And so a company that is in store but doesn't understand online would be ideal client. A company that is just on Amazon, because again, Amazon's very easy to sell on, but they don't really know how to sell into Home Depot or Lowe's or Wayfair. They would be an ideal client. Or a company that is selling into all those places, but they're just underperforming, which honestly will probably be the majority of them. They're in there. They don't really know how to rank. They don't have good promotional content. They don't have any reviews on their product or very few reviews because they don't know how to manage them and get more reviews. Those are the types of companies we'd be able to help like immediately.
That's awesome. And I love what you said there about, you know, niching down because maybe you can help them with that other problem down the road. I found this personally to be great as well with our agency focused on podcasting. That's a lot of times that's kind of our gateway in. And then you identify other problems to solve once you're in there. And then you're upselling them into different services and offerings that you have that they didn't even know that you were capable of. So I think that's a great way because it's really easy to position yourself as an expert when you're super niche and not trying to do everything. But then saying when you get in, like, oh, I noticed that. Hey, we could help you do that. We could help you do that.
Yeah, totally. And then, you know, you're helping them. So now they trust you.
Yeah.
So the main thing is in order for someone to cut a check, they got to trust you. So everybody's first focus should just be on trust. How do they, you know, once you asked me earlier, how did I know the deal was going to work? Because people are ready to cut that check, right? That tells you have a business idea. And then just like you said, then you can get in there, get a little bit deeper, understand the company and hopefully help them further and provide more value.
Yep. For sure. Well, Luke, I really appreciate you coming on, sharing a little bit about your journey, how you've managed the starting these companies, growing these companies, and managing your family on the side and in this new venture that you have with Retail Band. It's been awesome to hear about. And just to wrap things up, where can people learn more about you and your companies?
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. I really enjoyed it. And you have a great podcast. And I was listening, actually. I surfed this morning. I was getting out of the water and I was listening on the podcast, and it was super interesting. You had a British guy there that was, he had some colorful language. That was a funny one. But anyways, thanks so much for having me on this podcast. And how people can find me on LinkedIn, Luke Peters on LinkedIn, and definitely check out the my podcast, the Page One podcast, or find me on Retail Band, retailband.com.
Cool. Well, Luke, it was awesome to chat with you, man, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Ryan.
And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcast and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third, take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.